what we call dissemination of the object page, it does all this stuff. Brings it up in a nice presentation format. So it brings together the top books on a particular subject in Amazon, along with links to your local library. So we thought that was pretty cool, and the students actually had some fun doing that and learned a bit about web services, and I think it opened up some possibilities. So I talked about the liberal definition of web service, and that's one I prefer. Amazon presents their results in a kind of a REST style interface. There's a URI syntax, you hit it and it comes back in XML. Really nice, easy to parse, easy to hit with some very, with little effort in, you know, coming up with client code to do it. Everybody does HTTP, right? So that's one. Google has a somewhat controversial SOAP interface. Well, they also have an HTML interface, which they might not like people parsing that, but I like to do it. So, you know, you could take that and, for your personal queries, look at the content in a different way, or combine it with some other stuff. The archive.org Wayback Machine, this is a really neat service, I would consider, out there. So these guys, Brewster Kahle and other people in the organization, came up with this really neat archive of the web. You give it a URL and you get caches of the web at particular points in time. It's a very cool way to figure out how something has changed over time. If you're doing research and you want to find out how a company presented itself 3 years ago, and you know today it might present itself a little differently, well, you can do that. And they have a huge link base that's just waiting to be explored, but the main service there is the archive. Well, Google provides this cache, but it's only a one-time cache. It's based on the most recent result of crawling a particular website. I'll talk about combining those in a minute. But other services that are out there, the W3C RDF validator. There's a service that you pass a reference to some RDF, and it'll tell you whether it's valid, but it'll also draw it for you. And I thought that was cool. Well, you know, they probably don't want a ton of people hitting their server and using their little interface for doing this, but the code is out there. And in a lot of cases, this code is freely available and you can create your own local instances. So that's one idea, the schema validator. You know, maybe you want to use that. I can't think about how to use it in content management, really, but you could probably do some cool stuff with it. And there's just tons and tons of services out there if you adopt a liberal definition. So how did we do it? Well, in Fedora, we have this concept of a digital object, which is a lot like the concept of resource on the web. So it's kind of an abstract idea, and it has, actually in Fedora, it has representations. And these representations are called disseminations. Well, a digital object also has data streams, so sources for what's presented, but not necessarily exactly what's presented. And the disseminator's job is to take these sources and translate them and use them in whatever way to present a representation of the resource. So in Fedora, there are links to web services. And they talk about how, what the requirement of the web service is. We actually use WSDL to, you know, describe the requirements of services and pass them through and you get results. Is anybody familiar with the concept of XML pipelines? Probably. Okay, great. Well, in the Fedora model, because data streams can be referenced, we can support this concept of what we call disseminator chaining. And that's just like XML pipelines, except it's not XML necessarily. You can certainly do it, but you can do things like, you know, first apply the black and white transformation to this image, then throw on my copyright statement, and so on. Disseminator chaining is stuff that I'm personally real interested in, because I think you can do all kinds of really neat stuff with it. Just like you can do neat stuff with XML pipelines that people are starting to do. So I wanted to go through this demonstration and show you these disseminations, but I guess I'll be a little more verbal instead. The first example is an object that has a data stream that's a Dublin Core XML record for the object, and it also has a JPEG data stream. These are actually, the Dublin Core happens to be managed locally, and the JPEG data stream is a reference to content that's just out there on the web. We're using, in this example, a service called Image Manipulation that we had a student write, which takes a data stream by reference, so by a URL, reads it in, does whatever translation you decided to do, and returns the transformed version. So, real briefly, the data flow in this example is client or web browser to Fedora, which is a URL, which is a particular request for a particular representation of an object. And what Fedora does is it says, okay, what services do I need to invoke to fulfill this request? And so it goes out and fulfills the request using the image manipulation service. And once that does its job, the stream, the information is streamed back to the client. In this particular example, we did a lot of things with this service. It converts to, Ping, JPEG, TIFF, a few other formats, to and from all these different formats. It does grayscaling. It does this kind of watermark thing where you throw on your copyright statement. It does resizing, rescaling, etc. Every object in Fedora is presented to the user as an index to its methods. It's also presented in XML form. So it's just a reflection on the object. What does this object do? Well, hit the URL, and you find out what the methods are. You find out what the valid parameters might be. You don't deal with what services are invoked on the back end to do this as a client. You just say, here's what I want of this object, and Fedora mediates and invokes whatever services have been plugged into that object. So another example is, chaining. So I talked about this before. Another object is, let's say, a TEI object, mainly TEI. It has the Dublin Core XML metadata, but it also has a TEI data stream, which is XML, happens to be managed locally. The Text Encoding Initiative, just real briefly, is an initiative that it has this format called TEI, which is an XML form, for saving books, mostly historical stuff. So they're working on getting manuscripts and things into this format so people can use them in other ways. So this object, in this example, has TEI. It also has a special data stream, which is a dissemination. So that dissemination, which is the data stream, is a FO XML dissemination, which means that it's in the FO format. I call it FO. I don't know what you call it, but it's interestingly a component of the object that can be treated either as a representation of the object or a component to build other representations. So in this example, we use the Saxon servlet as a service, along with another data stream called TEI to FO, which is a style sheet. Turns it into FO. And then we use the FOP service, Apache. We just threw it on a web server, and it does this conversion. And what you get at the end of the day is PDF from TEI. And actually, I've done a DocBook one, too. Which DocBook style sheets take a long time to process. but the idea that you can go from DBX to PDF is great, just in a click. So the data flow in this example is the request comes in Fedora. The Fedora says, okay, this needs to be resolved. So we're going to bring this dissemination in. So it goes off and does the dissemination to FO from TEI and uses that as a data stream to another dissemination, which is the PDF. And so it goes from TEI to FO to PDF. And the examples on that URL there actually work. They're plugged into the local server that we have. But there's hyperlinks if you want to play with this stuff. Now I go to my favorite demo, which is the Google Wayback demo. Google, you have this experience when the site is slash.it that you go to Google's cache, or you check the comments for other people who've graciously included a local copy. I do that all the time. But there's also sites where it's not so much information that's totally current, but it's that I want to see how the site's evolved over time. So I could go to Wayback and hit a URL and get back a list of their caches and go to, well, I don't know the URL all the time, to what I want. And I want to browse the web in a history kind of way. It's really pretty cool. This happens to take a little while because the archive machines aren't really scaled to their fullest potential. But certainly if archive.org was as responsive as Google and the servers were architected similarly, this would happen in like 2 or 3 seconds. So what happens in this example is we have user input to a dissemination, which is an object that is actually a front end to these services. It takes a parameter called terms and passes the value in the back end to Google. Google, well, if you use the SOAP interface to Google, you can use XML after you've take it out of the SOAP envelope and such. When I prototyped this, I just used Web Scraper. So I hit Google at the regular URL, turned it into XML, and then ran a style sheet over it. It's obviously more brittle than the XML, the pure XML approach. So we get results in Google and XML. And now we can use a style sheet to insert calls into the Wayback engine. For every URL in the results, we insert a call. Actually, it's kind of a chained call to get results from archive, turn it into XML. And then at the end of the day, when you pass all this through the X-Include service, you have a full document, which is the results from Google combined with the results from archive for all those links. Add a style sheet, you've got presentation. So that's what this does at the end. It takes a few seconds to run, but ultimately what you get back is something that looks like Google's results. Instead of the little cached button, it has a drop-down of dates. And then you click, go, take me back, it goes back. In this example, there are a lot of dynamic, what we call dynamic data streams which are based on mechanisms that are out there that can produce changing results. But there are also just two main static data streams, the style sheets. So one is the one that inserts the X includes, the other is the one that presents the results. So the dissemination is just a method called getHistory, and it takes a parameter terms. So in the digital library community, there's this issue with preservation. It's taken incredibly seriously by people. I used to do document management consulting, working with Documentum, and I worked with companies where they were very concerned about presenting results, getting things out there quick, going from internal press releases to the web. But they weren't as concerned about preservation. They were, you know, once it's done, you're done. But our, you know, libraries are real concerned about keeping stuff for the future and keeping, not only maintaining the content, but maintaining the presentation in the exact same way that it was intended by the original author. So what can you do about preservation and web services? Well, you can follow some common sense. There's some people creating standards to help deal with this. I'm not sure on how those are going to go. It seems that you can describe and describe and describe and describe, but at some point you just got to deal with the problem and make informed decisions. So one step is disaggregating your transformation mechanisms from not only your content, but your content management system, because that's not content management, that's presentation. Once these are separate, then you can deal with them as separate entities, and you can re-implement services if you've got the interface. So I call it fighting service rot. One practice is to keep your own local copies of services. Another is to keep your data local. So just because you can reference external data doesn't mean you should. If you're a librarian who's concerned about some stuff, if you're really taking custodianship, you keep local copies because it could just disappear. And stay current with dependencies. That's just common sense. And when it comes to web services, you can also use common sense. Keep track of what services you're using. If you're using a service from a company that's about to go out of business, well, you got to deal with that. If a remote service dies, one great thing about dealing with web services is that you can still reconstruct a simple service given the WSDL. WSDL, for me, it's like a contract. You can describe whatever you want about the interface and the contract programmatically, but also verbally. And as long as your interfaces are described well, you can re-implement. I mean, you've got options. So actually, services that we use, whether they have WSDL or not, to start with, we generate that. So when you begin to use a service with Fedora, we make some WSDL for it. If you've got a local copy, you're looking pretty good. And I apologize for not being able to show you a lot of this stuff. These demos are in the slides, and you can click on them. And that's about it. I will take questions if anybody has them.
How are you managing all the transformed versions you're keeping, the local copies, and that kind of stuff?
Okay. How am I managing the transformed versions? So some of these things are temporal. If it's in a chain, you can do some interesting things with caching there. But if it's temporal, the idea is that it's not a state that you care about managing. You manage the path, but you don't manage the individual states. If you care about a certain state, yes.
It's not my area, so maybe it's a simple question, but how do you get a local copy of external web services? I understand some of them may be made available especially.
Right. It's a good question. Fine, three stuff. I mean, you obviously can't get a local copy of Google, and you can't get a local copy of the archive. So if you depend on something that's big and centralized, you're subject to whatever lifespan it has. If it's something like image transformation, use stuff that's already out there. And you can actually, there are a lot of free toolkits for doing this kind of thing that you can just pull into a servlet or whatever language you happen to use and host it as a service. People aren't necessarily providing copies of their services. I think they should, but you can do a lot of simple transformations with free software that's already out there.
And I'm guessing also that you have to do some archiving of the whole platform and operating system you're doing as well in order to access the content. With your software itself has to be archived, and versions of the operating system that you're using now, at some point may not work with web services that you've got. So are you archiving that in the sense of not?
No. I certainly could, you know, I could put it into a zip, throw it in somewhere as a data stream, generate some metadata about it, have it out there, depending on how active I wanted it to be. You know, I mean, that's the first approach to preservation is just to grab the bits and make sure they're safe. But machines, architectures go away, all that fun stuff, media dies, so we can't attack the whole problem.
So there was a discussion on the CMS about this in relation to archiving XML, and maybe XML's not going to be readable as it is today, 10 or 20 years from now. But it was decided, I think, that it's an ongoing process and that the preservation has to be continued, and as every element changes, not only the content, but the operating system or whatever has to be reviewed and handled as it comes along.
Yeah, absolutely. Staying current is important. Libraries have initiatives to go from old formats they started in to new formats they want to go with. You know, there's the argument that preservation is also a matter of emulation of old systems. I forgot the name of the person. I wish I could remember it, but there's a man who wrote some interesting papers on game emulators as a method of preservation of these old cartridges that are around that nobody can run anymore. And then you get into the other extremes. Of course, you can go as far as you want, but you know, what if we don't use electricity? You know, things like that. Like, you can go pretty far, though. A lot of people have. Yes, good question.
For something like the Google API, what are the rules that govern what you can do with it? Have an external or commercial content management system on the systems integrated. Building an application on that.
Right. So if you exposed it to the public, and if you treated it as a service of your own, you'd absolutely have to have an agreement with Google.
Right.
And that's just that you have to work around policy.
Sure, I understand.
Yeah. But no, like this example, my personal example,
sure.
I think it's useful to tell them. But I'm not going to try to sell it. I can't.
Well, it would just be nice if you could just grab the stuff.
I do too. I was disappointed that Google went away from just giving me some XML and letting me hit it as many times as I wanted. I could do that with the web browser. Why? Because you're presenting it in a nice format. Am I limited now?
Yeah.
You know? It's a good point.
I'm actually wondering, as far as global availability of web service, right? Isn't the point of web services that it's returned someplace else and we just use it and everybody else reaping the benefits or the service of the particular web service?
I think I see your point, and I think it's...
My concern basically would be communicating it locally, is it because we need to keep up to date and compatible with our own particular application, our own service, or our own purposes for that matter, versus actually using web service for what it is, a web service, for making proposals, but
right.
What it's supposed to do, and
so I think that's a good point, and I think there are probably going to be more prevalent terms of use for services, but today, you know, you use it on a personal basis. If you're going to be hitting a site and they don't know about it, really hard, I'm going to get upset with you. So one idea is to reduce load on somebody else's server. If it's a commodity service, then it's something that makes sense to manage yourself if you can, or share it with other people. But something like Google, you know, you can't replicate it. You try to use it, try to ask them for nice permission. Hopefully, people with cool services will share them. Who knows what I need to do. All right. Yeah?
How do you manage to change, I mean, if you're relying on these external web services, say their API changes, you know, I can imagine you have some huge problems as you scale up and you're using thousands of different web services and a bunch of the APIs change. How does it then know in terms of bringing in these dependencies?
Sure. That's a good question, and we don't automatically deal with anything like that. It happens, APIs change. What the Java people did at Sun, typically when they extend an API, they'll do this nice thing where they don't override old meanings of methods. Something that meant iterate last year means the same thing today. And it's the responsibility is with the implementer. You can only try to manage so much. But the implementer, I feel, should really think twice about deprecating methods. Maybe you deprecate, but you still support. You know, you give warnings about things, but you don't just drop something off and say, "Here's my new version."
Just to add to that, there is an effort that's starting up on OASIS called WS-Change. I can tell anybody who's interested more about it, but it's about managing change web services.
And I heard your presentation just actually. I just might have ran out with the cell phone. I'm sorry about that. I had a little emergency and I didn't have it on. Anyway, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that also, which is perfect. All right. One last scan. Okay. Thank you.